broadcasting from 90.1 FM from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Hello, hello, everyone. You're listening to CJSF Radio 9.1 FM, broadcasting from the traditional and unceded territories of the Coast Salish people, including the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Coquitlam, and Katsi nations. Unceded means that these lands have never been surrendered, sold, or given up by these nations, and that we are currently situated on occupied territories. And always with that in mind, welcome to Open Mic. My name is Iago, and as always, I'm back here today to bring a little bit of stories that shape us, that share a little bit of their backgrounds, and that also share a little bit of struggles so that we identify, we inspire, and then we can also pursue maybe some changes in our personal lives. Today, to begin, I just want to play something more peaceful so that we have some time, we can relax, lots of info, lots of good music before, and I hope you enjoyed. This is My Love and I by Pat Metheny from the album Moon Deal.
Thank you.
And how did everyone find about this song? Well, I was certainly almost sleeping here, but I think it's a good start. It's a good start because we have a lot going on today, a lot of important discussions on the air. But I think that before we hop directly into policy, City Hall, and whatever discussion we lead to here with some really good songs, active and not sleepy-wise, I would like to propose that we continue to finish recording that I've started playing last week on my open mic. That interview refers to a talk that I have had with Indigenous elder Jane Lane, and in the first 53 minutes of the episode that we have played last week, he brought to us attention his life as an environmental activist, commenting somewhat on his past, on his family, bringing up the difficulties of being inserted into the foster care system here in Canada, talking a little bit of how of his involvement as an Indigenous and in Indigenous organizations. He also brought to our attention a little bit of how he organized and was one of the primary figures around the pipeline, the coordination with the Indigenous elders or behind the scenes, the involvement of for entities such as the Greenpeace in the process, and what we and now, as we head to the last episode, he's going to tell us what where we are heading at, what are we looking for our futures, how to keep our hopes up as environmental activists, and as for the future of climate here in British Columbia and Vancouver. So I hope you enjoy. This is Jane Layden, and this is the recorded interview.
One of the things we do is we go to the mountain. We do vision quests. We sit there and we look at what is it I should be and what is it I should do. And we go up on that mountain with no water and no food and a blanket to keep us warm and a tarp to keep us dry, and that's the only thing we care. And we sit there until we get an answer to that question. And as one of the rites of passage as an Indigenous male is to go to that mountain. And within the Anishinaabe nations, they go as a family every 5 years. Every 4 or 5 years, they go as a family up to the mountain. And they ask what the mission is, what it is they're supposed to do. And they get a direction on what they should do with their life, and it comes from this, from the grandfathers, from the spirits. And Dave Cushane says, well, so what we have here is governments that are run by people who have never been to the mountain. They don't know what it is they're supposed to do. So they just react to the strongest wind. In our industry, the strongest wind is money. So they react to the oil industry. They react to the tobacco industry. They react to all these different industries that have money. And that's the direction they go, because that's the direction the wind blows them. If they had a really good sense of who they were and what their mission was in this life, they would stand firmly on a piece of ground. One of the things we used to do as sun dancers who went to war is you would put a stake into the ground and you'd take a rope and you would attach it to yourself. It'd be attached to the stake and attached to yourself, and you would say, I am not moving from this place. And that really is what a vision quest is about. I find out what is the place I should never move from. I find out what is the principle I should carry. What is the walk I should walk within my life? And out of that comes principle. Without principle, you just have, like I say, people that blow around in the wind. So that's what Dave Cushane says. We have a nation of leaders who have never been to the mountain. They have never followed the traditions we follow and the teachings we follow.
That's so beautiful. I think I want to put this quote on my room if I could to remember every day, because I'm just sharing on my particular here, but I do want to be a politician. I do want to work with policy. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is understanding where the wind blows. And I'll just bring in a little bit here of what you've been saying. You are an amazing activist. You know amazing activists out there who are doing their best to protect nature. But we also know that the lobbying, it comes both ways. So you've once mentioned a lot behind that you think you're facing something, but you're actually multiple times you're facing battles that you're not seeing. And I think this lobbying of these organizations, the petrol, the tobacco, the lobbying, we don't see them doing it. We don't see how they influence the policy making on a daily basis. And then we come to what you just said, that is like they influence how people perceive where the window's blowing. So I think this is really beautiful.
The lobbying as well is some of it you don't see right now. You see it later. You see the so-cred, or liberal, I'm not sure which he was, finance minister becoming the executive director for Horizon Air as soon as he retires. You see our premier, Mr. Horgan, who ended up being in charge of an oil or natural resource company. We see them. So it's like, if you behave yourself, we may not be able to give you money. Because you remember what happened to Glenn Clark when he had a neighbor bought himself provided a balcony for him, right? A back porch. He ended up losing his job. So they're not going to lose their job then. They're going to do it. And the other thing that happened to Glenn Clark is when he lost his job, Jim Pattison said, I will make you one of my executives if you promise never to run in politics again. So industry knows, and politicians know, that if they toe the line, they will be bought after the fact. After they've retired, they'll become executives of this or that or the next thing, you know? So there's all of that stuff goes on. And that's lobbying. Cut through the BS, that's lobbying. If you do this for me, I'll do that for you. That's what lobbying is about, you know? And one of the other points that's made, I think Greenpeace makes it, that they have like 50 people, 50 meetings with the oil industry in a year, and Greenpeace, with the oil industry and federal government, Greenpeace gets 2 or 3. You know? So how do you outdo that? And how can you afford to wine and dine to the extent that Jim Pattison can, or that Sinclair can, or whatever the heads of the oil industry and stuff, right? How do you compete with that? You know,
that's such a strong message. I don't know. I really don't know how we compete with that. But I think that upon this, I don't want to take that much. We've been here for a while, and I know the importance of your time. So I just want to maybe close up with something on this segment. Like, how do you find the energy to keep battling? Like at this age, and where do you find this energy? Or I don't know if you are, but if so, how do you stay hopeful that things can change facing what you've just told me and just told everyone?
Well, I'm just going to go. Goodness marches on, I think, you know, when I look at the California grapes boycott, we fought for years, you know, to get that to happen, so that Latinos were not brought in, Mexicans were not brought in from Mexico, and put out there to work on California grapes while they were spraying DDT on the crops at the same time. While they were there doing the work, they were getting sprayed by pesticides. That doesn't happen anymore. So that's a little bit of a march forward, but it's nothing goes directly forward because now we have Trump wanting to send all the illegal immigrants. And I'm probably imagining, since the indigenous nations didn't give Trump permission to be here, he probably is an illegal immigrant as well. But so you see that. You see it moves back and it moves forward. There's the ebb and flow. It's like the tide, right? But you have to believe. If you don't stand, again, it's back to the going to the mountain. If you've gone to the mountain and you know what you're supposed to do, and I've been to the mountain several times about this, when um, uh, Greenpeace and Stand and several other organizations approached us, approached the indigenous communities and said, would you be willing to partner with us in the fight against the Trans Mountain Pipeline? And what they were told is you have to get into our sweat lodges. You go into our sweat lodges for a couple months. You know, you come in once a week for a couple months. At the end of that, we'll talk about our relationship. So they came in, and when they came in, they came in with trepidation around what happens when I go to the sweat lodge. Same as they would have what happens if I go up on the mountain. You know, it's this version of going to the mountain is going to the sweat lodge because you pray and you get the spirits come in for you. But the end of the day, after the 2 months, they had a really much clearer understanding of what Indigenous culture was about. And of what we were doing, we had an understanding of whether or not they were willing to stand beside us. There's a chief in the Lakotas, the Dakotas, that says, "I don't care what your job is. I don't care what kind of a car you drive. I don't care how long you've been to school. What your house looks like. How rich you are." What I care about is when I'm standing in the fire, will you stand beside me? When I'm standing in the fire, will you stand beside me? And that's kind of what it boils down to when you get rid of all the window dressing of colonialism. It's like all that's left is the human, is the person. And as that person, will you be a warrior along with me? You know? And that's... So sometimes it's not a matter of being able to just continue. It's a matter of understanding I can't stop continuing because I have a contract with the Creator and with the people I'm with. So that's...
And I hope I can follow that too. And I think you've inspired so many people today. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate you being here today with us.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm going to do a promotion. It's not a self-promotion, except that I'm in the book. But there's a book called On High Ground, and it's about the battle against the pipeline. But it takes all of these activists, and they have a chapter. So I had a chapter, and we have an older Japanese naturalist who has a chapter. We have all the people that fought the pipeline up in the interior, and that they each have chapters. Of how it relates to them, and it's really interesting because it tells you how an activist relates. For myself as an activist, and I know these people, and we walk together. We take part in the walks. They come and support our stuff, and we support theirs. And suddenly you can read this book, and you'll find out what they're about.
So the name is.
And it's really powerful.
On High Ground.
On High Ground. Yeah.
Okay. Well. It's shared.
Okay.
And you can bet that I will read it as well. So, if I may, thank you for being here. And that was our interview with Chen Leiden. I appreciate so much him coming here, and I hope that everyone could take a little bit of what he said to their hearts. We are standing, I think that one sentence that resonates with what we're going through right now, with the Conference of the Parts out there just finishing, with the G20 just finishing their meetings, is that when we are standing on the fire, are you going to stand with me? We're talking about community here. We're talking about a global issue that affects us all, that is the environmental change. And of course, we need to consider immediate solutions. We need to consider how people are being affected by policies right now, but we also have to have in mind that we are a community that we praise for next generations. And I think that's something really powerful that he brought us to when he was discussing exactly when you were standing in the fire, are you going to stay with me? That also talks to you a little bit of the next interview I have aligned for today with Juliana Janot. There's been a climate strike a few months ago, maybe one month and a half, which we had approximately 100,000 people going out there to the streets to say, this is the message, this is what we're feeling about the current environmental policies. But we also have that around in what, July 22nd, I think, 23rd, we had Vancouver rolling back on the restricting gas heat in new buildings. And I think that this is an important discussion. That's what Juliana Janot is going to bring a piece to us about. And we can talk a little bit about that after. So I hope you enjoyed this talk with her. And thank you so much.
Shifts and those bigger victories are possible again. We will be here fighting for our beautiful city.
Today we're diving into a topic that has a lot of people in Vancouver talking about and maybe even feeling a little bit frustrated. Since 2022, the city has limited natural gas use for heating and hot water in new homes, a move aimed at reducing carbon emissions and aligning with Vancouver's 2030 climate targets. But earlier this year, after a narrow 6-5 council vote, the policy was reversed, allowing natural gas in new constructions under certain conditions. This was a policy that positioned our city as a global leader in climate action, helping reduce emissions from buildings, and account for nearly 60% of Vancouver's climate pollution. This reversal, influenced by a last-minute push from the gas industry, is now being revisited by council today. The stakes seem to be really high then. So, joining us to comment on what that means to Vancouver climate goals, environment, and our city's reputation is Juliana Janot, a climate leader, student from UBC, working with the WECAN, the West Coast Climate Action Network, who has been closely following this issue. So, thank you for being here, Ju. So, today's the vote potentially determined whether Vancouver reaffirms its commitment to a zero-carbon building policy or double down on this reversal. You've been at the climate strike in Vancouver, at the environmental rally that happened this morning in front of the City Hall. So, how do you see the environmental and social stakes that are occurring for the city, and how can that affect us?
Thank you so much, Iago, for the opportunity to be speaking here today. I see that this is a decision of very high stakes because the gas burned in the buildings in Vancouver is responsible for around like 60% of Vancouver's climate pollution. We are talking about a climate policy that was able to be achieved, this victory of committing to decarbonize our buildings, right? And now a big backlash for us to reverse this policy, but also to an opportunity for the climate movement to get together, to show our voice, and to really not make this backlash happen and allow this climate policy to continue in place for us to decrease around 60% of our emissions. That's a big victory that we can have. And it's always also not only environmental costs, like environmental issues that are at stake, but really human issues, because by getting gas out of buildings, we're going to replace the heating with heat pumps. And heat pumps are a solution not only for the environment, but also for humans, because heat pumps provide cooling in the summer the same as they provide heating in the winter. So when they provide cooling in the summer, we saw how the heat domes really affected people, and how especially the elders and the more vulnerable populations, they were very affected, and so many people died and had a hard time. So when people have access to heat pumps, they can actually stay cool during the summer. So it's cost effective, and it's better for the planet because we don't have pollution. We see that pollution in the city creates the pollutants that are released when the gas is burned. They are terrible for our health too. It's public health costs, right? So it can cause respiratory diseases, it can cause cardiovascular diseases, it's terrible for like children's lungs, for asthma. So it's really a big thing, the decision that's going to happen today at the City Council. So I'm really glad that the environmental movement was there in front of the City Hall, and also that people are writing to the City Council. So every participation counts in this crucial moment.
So you've been talking to other climate leaders as well, and you were at the rally this morning. What is the community feeling? How are people feeling about it, in your opinion?
I feel like it's definitely a moment very important. So we are anxious to know what the decision's going to be like. But I'm glad that I feel like we feel comfort on each other, on being united in the environmental movement, knowing that each one of us are there. We're sending our messages. We are pressuring the government, and the city council is very split in this decision. So we hope that our support to the council, holding them accountable, will really make them choose the right option. We also know that Fortis BC and the natural gas lobby, the fossil fuel lobby, they are also there. They're going to be there at the city council meeting. And by the way, the city councilor who had brought forward this idea of reversing this policy, he was recently caught meeting with a Fortis BC lobbyist. So the fossil fuel industry is there talking to our politicians. That's why we citizens of Vancouver who want clean air and who don't want pollution, and we environmental activists, we also need to be there talking to our politicians and showing our voice, showing that we actually care and we want a clean, a green city, right? Because Vancouver used to praise itself as the greenest city in the world. And the Women Transforming Cities, they did a survey with all the city councilors that are currently elected in Vancouver, and each one of them said that they would take climate action aligned with science. So today we're actually going to see which city councilors will keep their word and will vote for the climate and for the people.
Yeah, thank you. It's always so good to see passionate young leaders taking a role in shaping what the future of the city and the policies are going to look like. Do you have any say on that to finalize? So how can people and young people engage directly with this decision that is happening today?
Yes, I do. So each person can help. There is a way that you can get in on the internet. You can search right to city council and mayor in Vancouver, and then you're going to get to a link from the government in which you can just click feedback on upcoming meeting agenda, and then you click oppose, and then you leave a comment on why do you want the city to oppose. You can talk about the sustainability, you can talk about the health issue, you can talk about our future. And every person who does that is going to count, because they're going to see that the city of Vancouver, the population, supports the electrification of our buildings. And you can also call the city council. So stand.earth, they have this organization. They are sending emails, and they have on their website as well ways that you can send your message to the city council, and you can even call them. So if each one of us show our voice, we can show the city council and we can support them to make the right decision. Thank you, Yagu, for the opportunity to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you, Juliana. And that's it. And that was our talk. I think that's something that comes out of this conversation. The first side is that we have a strong youth movement that goes around talking about what is the future gonna be shaped like when the climate change that we so much talk about comes. Because creating resilience and adapting can come along like only a one side policy. So with that, I want to mention a few things here that comes around this issue. A first reminder is that one of the key players, I just recently find that out, Christine Boyle, one of the bylaws original supporter, she's a lease, so she can't, she won't be able, and we have one last counselor on this side. And also, I want to talk about a little bit on this debate on what could be the positive sides when we are referring to putting down the bylaw. So one of the benefits, and that comes from Mayor Sim that framed this decision, is the affordability. When we're talking about allowing natural gas as an energy source, we're talking about a cost-effective option, actually, for heating and hot water. So we know that usually energy solutions come with a price, but I always like to bring it back my own opinion, that when we're talking about that, we're also bringing up the discussion of immediate measures versus future consideration. So technically, lower